Hello and welcome to today's reading of The Week magazine, the best of U.S. and international media, all you need to know about everything that matters. I'm reading from the April 12th issue. First, we turn to The World at a Glance. From Moscow, new evidence on Havana Syndrome. The Kremlin this week dismissed as quote-unquote baseless new allegations that Russia was behind Havana Syndrome, a mystery ailment afflicting some 1,500 U.S. officials worldwide. U.S. diplomats in Cuba were the first hit, coming down in 2016 with extreme headaches, dizziness, and memory loss. While U.S. officials initially suspected that Cuba or Russia had used some kind of sonic weapon, a lengthy government investigation concluded last year blamed the symptoms on pre-existing conditions and social contagion. Now, a new investigation by CBS's 60 Minutes, in collaboration with Russian dissident site The Insider and Germany's Der Spiegel, disputes that finding. It shows evidence that a Russian intelligence squad, Unit 29155, has been developing, quote, non-lethal acoustic weapons, end quote, and targeting U.S. intelligence officials, including evidence that Russian agents were present at times and sites that Americans were hit. The Biden administration said it stood by its assessment. Moving to Istanbul, opposition triumphs. The opposition won all major cities in Turkey's local elections this week in a clear rebuke to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. The center-left Republican People's Party, CHP, flipped Turkey's capital, Ankara, and its fourth-largest city, Adana, and kept control of Istanbul, Izmir, and Antalya. While Turks re-elected Erdogan just last year in a vote outside observers considered free but not fair, many are disillusioned after 21 years of his increasingly autocratic rule. The economy is in free fall, with inflation at 70%. The election positions Istanbul's popular mayor, Ekrem İmamoğlu, who won re-election by 1 million votes, as Erdogan's top rival. From Jerusalem, aid workers killed. Israel faced a storm of international condemnation this week after its airstrikes destroyed an aid convoy, killing 6 foreign staffers with the charity World Central Kitchen and their Palestinian driver. The WCK convoy was attacked just after it delivered more than 100 tons of food to a warehouse in central Gaza. All 3 vehicles were bombed separately, even though they were clearly marked with the WCK logo, and the group had coordinated the route with the Israeli military. In a rare apology, Israel's military chief, General Herzi Halevi, said the bombings, quote, shouldn't have happened, end quote, and ordered a full investigation. The victims included 1 Canadian-American, others from the United Kingdom, Australia, and Poland. In his strongest criticism yet of Israel's prosecution of the war in Gaza, President Biden said he was outraged and heartbroken over the bombing, saying explicitly that Israel has not done enough to protect aid workers and civilians. Biden's comments added to mounting anger within Israel over Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's handling of the Gaza war. Many Israelis blame the Prime Minister for failing to prevent the October 7th terror attack by Hamas that killed some 1,200 Israelis and started the war. They are furious that Hamas still holds 130 hostages. In the largest protest since the war began, thousands of people demonstrated at the Israeli parliament in Tel Aviv and outside Netanyahu's home in Jerusalem to demand his resignation this week, saying the prime minister had prioritized his political survival over the good of the country. Some held lanterns and banners with the faces of the hostages. Others carried posters saying, "You've failed," or "Impeachment now." From Brussels, Russian disinformation. Lawmakers in the European Parliament are being paid by Moscow to spread Russian propaganda, Belgian Prime Minister Alexander De Croo said last week. DeCruz said, quote, close collaboration, end quote, between Belgian and Czech intelligence services had uncovered the influence operation, but he didn't identify lawmakers who have taken Kremlin cash. Czech and German media named two members of the far-right Alternative for Germany party as suspected recipients, Maximilian Kra, member of the European Parliament, and Peter Bistrin, a lawmaker in Germany's lower house of parliament, both deny wrongdoing. The payments allegedly came from the Czech-registered news site Voices of Europe, which officials in Prague said was a Russian front. From San Francisco del Mar, Mexico, migrant tragedy. The bodies of eight Chinese migrants washed up on a Mexican beach last week after their boat capsized during a perilous journey north toward the U.S. The seven women and one man had set off from Tapachula near the Guatemalan border, were sailing up the Pacific coast of Mexico to avoid migration checkpoints. One Chinese migrant survived. It's not known what happened to the Mexican man who operated the boat. Number of Chinese migrants entering the U.S. from Mexico has surged in recent years. 37,000 were detained at the U.S.-Mexico border last year, 50 times the number 2 years earlier. Iris Wang, a Chinese migrant who took a boat up the coast in late 2022, told CNN that she almost died on the journey when a storm hit. I never want to see the sea at night again, she said. From Quito, Ecuador, violence rebounds. Ecuadorian President Daniel Noboa announced a renewed assault on quote-unquote narco-terrorism last week after a spate of drug-related killings. In just a few days, gangsters abducted and killed five vacationers in the beach town of Ayampe, apparently mistaking them for members of a rival drug gang. Gunmen sprayed a street in the port city of Guayaquil with bullets, killing nine people, and Ecuador's youngest mayor, Brigitte Garcia, 27, was kidnapped and shot dead in a coastal town of San Vicente. Before the spree, Noboa had been touting his success in curbing the drug gangs. He sent in the military after a shocking episode in January when gang members took over prisons and stormed a TV station. Since then, some 12,000 suspects have been arrested. And from Lima, presidential bling. Police raided Peruvian President Dina Boluarte's home last week in a surprise escalation of a criminal investigation into her luxury watch collection. Boluarte has reportedly bought $500,000 worth of jewelry and Rolex watches since taking office in December of 2022. Last month, the public prosecutor's office launched a probe into alleged, quote, unlawful enrichment, end quote, to determine how the president could afford such purchases on her annual salary of roughly $50,000. Midnight raid of her home was authorized after Boluarte failed to appear for questioning last week, and police used a battering ram to burst through the president's front door. They also raided the presidential palace, reportedly took photos of 10 expensive watches. Boluarte has denied the allegation and suggested it is sexist to care about what the president wears. Next, we'll move to some sample editorials. First, the cleanup of Baltimore's bridge disaster. What happened? Engineers and demolition crews began the slow and arduous work of clearing the ruins of Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge this week after a shipping accident that killed six construction workers and crippled one of the nation's busiest shipping ports. The bridge crumpled into the Patapsco River after a 985-foot cargo ship, the Dolly, lost power around 1:30 a.m. and barreled into one of its supports. The ship, whose unexplained power loss is under investigation, remains pinned under thousands of tons of mangled steel. Workers opened a small channel to allow limited shipping. In the coming weeks, they hope to open deeper channels and expand access to a port that typically handles up to $200 million worth of goods daily. cleanup, which involves cutting the wreckage into pieces that can be removed by a massive crane while searching for the still missing bodies of four of the dead workers, is an incredibly complex job, said Maryland Governor Wes Moore. Our timeline will be long. President Biden approved $60 million in immediate federal aid, vowing to pay the full cost of rebuilding the bridge, which could run as high as $2 billion. But he faces strong opposition from congressional Republican budget hawks. Representative Ralph Norman, Republican, South Carolina, said the bridge collapse was a regional problem, and that paying for a replacement with federal dollars would be, quote, totally absurd, end quote. Federal and local officials pointed out that Baltimore's port has a major impact on the national economy, with most imported cars and farm equipment passing through, as well as many exports of U.S. farm products. This matters to folks in rural North Carolina, in Kansas and Iowa, said Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott. This matters to the global economy. No party conversation should be involved. What the editorial said. This disaster impacts not just Baltimore or Maryland, but all Americans, said the Baltimore Sun. So why must we beg Republicans for federal aid? When a Gulf Coast state gets hit with a hurricane, do we debate whether the federal government should help rebuild washed-out roads? No city or state could handle the enormous costs to come. Sorry, said National Review, but Maryland needs to pull its weight. There is clearly a federal role during the cleanup efforts, but Biden went too far when he pledged to foot the entire bill. Maryland has been running budget surpluses and has $2.5 billion in its rainy day fund, in part because of an influx of unspent federal pandemic aid. They should dig into it, and any federal funds should come from the $1.1 trillion allocated in the 2021 infrastructure bill, most of which has not yet been spent. What the columnist said. As Americans saw a video of the bridge crumpling into the water, they saw a human tragedy, said Charlie Sykes in MSNBC.com. The MAGA world saw an opportunity to stoke suspicion, distrust, and fear. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, suggested it was, quote, an intentional attack, end quote, by terrorists. Representative Nancy Mace, Republican of South Carolina, blame Biden for spending on green energy instead of roads and bridges, while online right-wing influencers blamed Scott because he's black, calling him a DEI mayor. In MAGA world, any event can be used to promote division and spread baseless smears. The irony is that MAGA country will suffer if the port does not quickly reopen, said Greg Sargent in The New Republic. Billions in coal, agricultural machinery, soybeans, and other products pass through Baltimore's port every year, much of it bound for or coming from the agricultural and industrial heartland. The bridge also was part of an interstate highway, I-695. When disasters of this magnitude strike, we really are all in it together. But that reality is exactly what the MAGA worldview seeks to deny at all costs. The next segment from The Week magazine, Best Columns. Russia, lashing out and cracking down. In the police state of Russia, there is no likelihood of a real investigation into last week's Crocus City Hall attack, said Florian Neiderdorfer in Der Standard from Austria. Even as the ISIS Khorasan, a terrorist group, took responsibility for the attack that killed 144 and injured hundreds, Russian President Vladimir Putin already knew he wanted to blame Ukraine. Last week, he admitted radical Islamists had stormed the Moscow music venue, but claimed they had been sent by the neo-Nazi Kyiv regime. In reality, the U.S. Embassy in Moscow had warned the Russian authorities of an attack more than 2 weeks ago, so did Moscow's ally, Iran, who gotten wind of the plot while interrogating members of ISIS-K, an Islamic State affiliate based in Afghanistan. None of the 10 Central Asians arrested in connection with the crime so far has fingered Kyiv, despite being badly beaten during interrogation. One was forced to eat his own sliced off ear in a gruesome video. Police also arresting ordinary Russians on charges of justifying terrorism, said Novaya Gazeta, Russia in exile. Those include a Russian Tajik singer and former Eurovision contestant who condemned the alleged torture of the suspects in the Krokus City Hall attack. At this point, nothing is firmly established, said Dmitry Trenin in Russia Today, Russia, state-owned. Washington declared within minutes of the attack that Ukraine had no involvement. Moscow would blindly accept that story. If the evidence points to Kyiv, you can expect that Putin will lift the informal guarantee that Russia would not target Zelensky personally. That cynical and absurd story is exactly how you'd expect Putin to spin the tragedy for his own benefit, said Denis Levin in Politico.eu from Belgium. Russia had suffered 15 major terror attacks since he first took power in 1998, and Putin's exploited each to consolidate or boost his authority. After the deadly Moscow high-rise bombings in 1999, then-Prime Minister Putin blamed Chechen rebels, launched a popular bloody war against the breakaway region. When suicide bombers targeted the Moscow subway in 2010, Putin said the police needed more surveillance capacity. Cameras with facial recognition went in across the subway system, then nationwide. Today, Russia uses roughly 500,000 CCTV cameras, quote, to track and detain opposition activists, end quote. Senior officials inside the Kremlin know that all the claims about Ukraine are nonsense, said The Economist for the United Kingdom. However, Putin can't accept Western explanations without undermining his entire paranoid and conspiratorial worldview. Meanwhile, directing his ire at Russia's sworn enemies, the Ukrainians, the West, conveniently justifies more war and repression. Putin's fixation on Ukraine is what left Russia vulnerable to attacks, with his intelligence and military resources laser-focused abroad, said Steve Brown in Kyiv Post from Ukraine. Now, in his hatred for all things Ukrainian, Putin seems to dismiss the notion that Islamic fundamentalism poses a real and present danger. As the English proverb says, there are none so blind as those who will not see. From Brazil, a best column, Jail or Exile, Bolsonaro Must Choose, by Ricardo Noblat, Metropoles. Jair Bolsonaro's days of freedom are numbered, and he knows it, said Ricardo Noblat. Our law-bending ex-president is the target of numerous criminal investigations, including one that puts him at the center of a coup conspiracy. Last week, we learned that Bolsonaro had fled to the Hungarian embassy in Brasilia back in February, possibly to seek asylum. Federal police had just accused him of taking steps to overturn the 2022 election, which he lost to President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, and of pressuring military chiefs to help topple Lula's government. Video from the Hungarian embassy, obtained by the New York Times, shows that Bolsonaro slept, ate, and drank there on what is technically foreign territory for 2 full days, courtesy of Hungary's strongman leader, Viktor Orban. Bolsonaro claims he went to talk politics, saying, I have a circle of friends with some world leaders, but authorities are incensed and believe he might have been trying to skip town. But why didn't Bolsonaro ask his buddy Orban for asylum? Maybe it's too cold and snowy in Budapest. Or perhaps he'd relish being hauled off in handcuffs to become a martyr to his insurrectionist cause. At this point, it's all but inevitable that he will be arrested, so he'll get his chance. A best column from Germany, The High Price of a Shorter Work Week, by Frank Specht, Handelsblatt. Is time the new money? Asked Frank Specht. After months of crippling rail strikes, a union representing German train engineers last week agreed to call off its stoppages in return for a shorter work week. Under the deal with state-owned rail operator Deutsche Bahn, engineers will see their weekly working hours drop from about 40 to 35 by 2029, while their wages will remain the same. Delighted with the win, the GDL union is now suggesting that other industries follow suit, with some labor activists angling for a national 4-day work week. This is the stuff of fantasy. Unlike the government-owned Deutsche Bahn, private firms can't simply finance less work at full pay through higher debt or taxpayers' money. And the productivity surge that would be required to offset the loss of millions of work hours is beyond any reality. How about a shorter week, you might ask, with lower pay for the privilege? That's not an option for ordinary Germans. While inflation has dropped sharply, living costs remain high, and many employees have no choice between time and money because they depend on every cent. The country is already struggling with a shrinking workforce, reels of red tape, and a stagnating economic growth. 35-hour work week would complete our transformation from an industrial powerhouse into a collective amusement park. And a best column from Norway, trying to tame a wild teenage tradition. April is party time for Norwegian high school seniors at Sigrid Havsten in Dagbladet, and we're not talking about run-of-the-mill keggers. Each spring, tens of thousands of students, known as Rus for the red graduation caps they traditionally wear, mark their final semester by embarking on the Rusring, the 3 weeks of ritualized booze-soaked revelry. High schoolers pool their cash to buy and trick out an old bus, then tour the town while blasting music and competing as many dares, wear loaves of bread as shoes for a day, chug a bottle of wine as possible. For some students, the Rusfring is a beautiful adventure, a time of friendship, solidarity, carousing, falling in love, maybe sex. For others, it's a nightmare of enforced spending, binge drinking, and hooking up. Growing concerns about this rite of passage exploded last month after boys in the southern town of Bryn painted a massive and explicit image of a couple having sex on the side of their Rusbus, which is also fitted with 52 feet of LED lights, a snow machine, 3 smoke machines, and 5 lasers. A woman's group reported the image to police as pornography, setting off a frenzied nationwide debate. Have grown-ups lost their sense of fun, or has Rus culture gotten out of hand? There's nothing fun about the sick perspective on sex and gender revealed by the Bryn bus, said Ellen Vagervik in Stavanger Aftenblad. Warped by internet porn, failed by parents who are unable to set boundaries, it's no surprise that high school boys thought their graphic image, which a sexually submissive woman is dominated by a heavily muscled man, was acceptable. The porno bus is just the latest in a long line of Rus ugliness, said Aaron Engelfort in Bergens Tidende. Seniors have been dared into having sex with inanimate objects and each other. Drug use is rife. So is misogyny. Rus songs are littered with derogatory language about girls, and a group of boys in Bergen declared a few years ago they wouldn't let, quote, whores over 130 pounds, end quote, on their bus. Thankfully, the outrage over the Bryn bus has stirred the government into action. Prime Minister Jonas Gahr Støre says local councils will be tasked with making Rusfring more inclusive starting in 2026, that officials will investigate Rusbus safety. Støre insists he's not canceling the festivities, yet it's hard to think of a bigger buzzkill than parties held under the auspices of the county council with middle-aged ministers as beautiful Rus princesses. Next segment in the Week magazine, Health and Science. Are we in the age of humans? Not yet. It's official, reports Vox. We are still living in the Holocene. For the past 15 years, a group of geologists have argued that humanity has so thoroughly transformed the natural world since the 1950s that our planet has entered a new geological epoch, the Anthropocene, or Human Age, to make their case to the scientific bodies that serve as guardians of the world's geological timescale. The researchers needed to find a golden spike, a physical site where the rock, sediment, or ice record clearly shows the shift from one epoch to the next. The Anthropocene Working Group, AWG, picked a deep sinkhole lake in Canada where the sediment reveals a surge in everything from nuclear radiation to fossil fuel pollution to chemical fertilizer use in the mid-20th century. But a key committee of researchers last month voted that the Anthropocene should not become an official epoch, with the International Union of Geological Sciences, a final arbiter on the subject, has now upheld that decision. Objectors to the Anthropocene proposal noted that humans were changing the planet long before the 1950s, most notably through the agricultural and industrial revolutions, and pushed back against the introduction of a geological epoch that spans less than a human lifetime. The Holocene began 11,700 years ago at the close of the last ice age, and other epochs cover millions of years. Still, some scientists say they will use the term Anthropocene despite its lack of an official stamp. We are in the Anthropocene, irrespective of a line on the timescale, said Francine McCarthy, an earth scientist and member of the AWG, and behaving accordingly is our only path forward. Also from the Health and Science section, the man who sees demons. In November of 2020, reality took a horrific turn for Victor Sara. People's faces suddenly began to look demonic to the Marine vet. Their ears, noses, mouths appeared to be stretched back. They have deep grooves in their foreheads, cheeks, and chins. My first thought was that I woke up in a demon world, Sarah, 59, tells NBCNews.com. You can't imagine how scary it was. Scientists have since diagnosed Sarah with prosopometamorphoposia, PMO, a rare neurological disorder that alters perception of people's faces. It can last for days, weeks, or even years. Other sufferers have reported seeing drooping faces and witch-like visages with pointed ears, long noses. There have been fewer than 100 recorded PMO cases, but experts suspect some cases may be misdiagnosed as schizophrenia or psychosis. Other sufferers may not tell anyone out of fear they'll be thought insane. It's not entirely clear what triggers PMO. Some patients have suffered head trauma, stroke, epilepsy, or migraines. Others have no evident structural changes in their brains. Sarah finds that glasses with green lenses alleviate the condition and hopes that by talking about his experiences, he can help other PMO sufferers avoid being misdiagnosed and institutionalized. That's my number one goal, he says. A warning sign for stroke. Millennials and Gen Zers who suffer from migraines may have an increased risk of stroke, a new study suggests. Researchers examined the health insurance data of more than 10,000 people in Colorado and found that for 18 to 34-year-olds, more strokes were linked to quote-unquote non-traditional risk factors, migraines, blood clotting disorders, kidney failure, and autoimmune diseases, than traditional risk factors such as high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, and obesity. Migraine was the most important of these non-traditional risk factors, associated with 20% of strokes in men and almost 35% in women. In fact, the younger they are at the time of stroke, the more likely their stroke is due to non-traditional risk factor, lead author Michelle Leppert of the University of Colorado School of Medicine tells Science Daily. More research, she added, is needed to determine why migraines, which affect more than 40 million Americans, could have this effect. Why teenagers stink. Teenagers are known for smelling a bit funky. Now, scientists in Germany think they know why. In a novel experiment, the researchers stitched cotton wool pads onto night clothes to collect body odor samples from 18 teens and 18 infants. Chemical analysis found pleasant citrusy and soap-smelling aldehydes in both age groups, but the teens also had a higher concentration of carbolic acids, compounds that smell like grass, cheese, and goats, as well as two naturally occurring steroids associated with the odor of sweat, urine, and sandalwood. Researchers think this is because of puberty. Hormones drive the production of sweat and sebum, an oily substance secreted through hair follicles. Those compounds break down into smelly gases. Co-author Iona Croy from the Friedrich Schiller University, Jena, in Germany, said the change may be largely driven by evolution. Baby odor facilitates bonding between parents and children, she tells Scientific American. Once children become teens and theoretically less reliant on mom and dad, their stinkiness can potentially help them foster a degree of independence. Next, we'll move to the business section. Dissembled. GE splits into three pieces. The breakup of what was once America's most admired company is now complete, said John Chesto in the Boston Globe. General Electric, co-founded by Thomas Edison in 1892, this week made its planned split into three companies. That's GE Verona for energy, GE Healthcare, and GE Aerospace. Launched to electrify America, GE grew into a global conglomerate, spanning everything from TV stations to toasters. But it was ultimately swamped with debt, suffered a precipitous stock plunge. A three-way split, first announced in 2021, might seem like an inauspicious end, but shares in GE have nearly doubled in value in the past year, and GE Verona stock rose in its debut. GE's split leaves Jack Welch's legacy in tatters, said Felix Salmon in Axios. Welch, who led GE from 1981 to 2000, was a bona fide corporate hero in the 1990s. But his legacy has not aged well in the 21st century, and he now appears as a man who was richly rewarded for using financial engineering to goose his company's share price at the expense of its employees' jobs. As a mentor, he hasn't fared much better. One of his acolytes, David Calhoun, just lost his job at Boeing. Of the many Welch disciples running major companies, only David Zaslav and Warner Brothers Discovery remains, and his performance has been mixed at best. Also from the business segment, boardrooms, Disney defeats Peltz challenge. Disney staved off a challenge to its board mounted by activist shareholder Nelson Peltz, said Svea Herbst-Bayless and Greg Romoloitis in Reuters. Peltz's hedge fund, Trian Fund Management, aimed to grab two board seats, arguing that new blood was needed after Disney had bungled its succession planning and lost its creative spark. After an acrimonious battle, Disney managed to secure enough votes from big institutional shareholders to keep its board intact. High-profile governance fight nonetheless prompted Disney to unveil a string of changes to win back investors' confidence. Its shares have gained nearly 50% since October. Some items from the bottom line column in the business segment. The S&P 500 had its best first quarter since 2019, gaining 10.2% in the first 3 months of the year. The Dow advanced 5.6% for its strongest first quarter performance since 2021. The NASDAQ ended the quarter with a 9.1% pop. CNBC.com. Exchange-traded funds tracking the S&P 500 added a record $137 billion in assets last year. Overall, the U.S. stock market now accounts for 60.5% of global stock market capitalization, from the Financial Times. French luxury tycoon Bernard Arnault topped Forbes' 2024 billionaires list with a fortune of $233 billion, pushing Elon Musk to the number two spot with $195 billion. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg rose to number four with $177 billion, a gain of $113 billion since last year, and Taylor Swift entered the list for the first time with $1.1 billion. From Forbes. Dollar stores composed more than a quarter of the U.S.'s total store openings in 2022 and last year, according to CoreSite Research. Dollar General operates 20,000 stores in the U.S., up from 5,000 in 2001. Walmart, by contrast, has just over 4,600 locations. From the Wall Street Journal. 20% of adults say they have used ChatGPT for work, up from 8% a year ago. Another 17% of respondents say they've used it for entertainment. And an identical number say they've tried it to learn something new, from Wired. Finally, from the bottom line column, Texas, which is expected to get the biggest influx of eclipse visitors, could pocket $428 million in eclipse-related tourism and spending, according to Ray Perryman, an economist in Waco. Johnson County, Indiana, is forecasting as much as $25 million in extra revenue, while Rochester, New York, expects about $10 million, from the Washington Post. Finally, from the business segment, labor. California passes $20 an hour fast food wage. 500,000 fast food workers in California started earning at least $20 per hour this week, said Natasha Chen in CNN.com. The increase, which raises fast food pay to $4 higher than the overall state minimum wage, caps a years-long fight by workers to establish better wages and working conditions in the fast food industry. The new law applies to restaurant chains with more than 60 nationwide locations. Some franchise owners said they already raised prices on menu items or cut worker hours in anticipation of higher costs. Next, we'll turn the page to the Making Money segment. Social Security. Should the U.S. raise the retirement age? Growing chorus of business leaders and GOP lawmakers is calling for raising the retirement age, said Lori Konish in CNBC.com. For decades, 65 was the quote-unquote anchor to which Americans attached their ideas about the end of the working life. But with record numbers of baby boomers hitting that age, those retirement plans no longer look sustainable. More than 11,200 Americans are expected to turn 65 every day, for a total of 4.1 million per year, from now through 2027. Age to get the full Social Security benefit is currently set at 67 for anyone born in 1960 or later, yet longer lifespans will put increasing pressures on the program, which is projected to have to start reducing benefits in 2033 if the current shortfall isn't addressed. Recent House GOP budget proposal called for lifting the age threshold for Social Security, though it did not specify by how much. An influential asset manager, Larry Fink, CEO of BlackRock, wrote in his annual letter that it's a bit crazy that our idea of the right retirement age originates from the time of the Ottoman Empire. Democrats say the proposal is quote-unquote extreme, but we've done this before, said Rick Newman in Yahoo. Back in 1983, the U.S. passed legislation to raise the retirement age from 65 to 67, a change that was phased in over 30 years. Any change in the eligibility age again will occur gradually, ensuring that nobody loses anything they already have. This is the best available solution to our untenable trajectory of retirement, said Tiana Lowe-Deutscher in the Washington Examiner. If today's seniors took the same number of retirement years as the average person retiring in 1940, they would work until age 77. Nobody is proposing that, but a modest increase would help stave off Social Security's insolvency without some other reform or tax increases. The average American retires at 62. Usually it's not by choice, said Daniel DeVise in USA Today. Most of us imagining easing out of our careers on our own terms, but the reality is that retirement often comes suddenly and unexpectedly via corporate layoff or household health scare. For blue-collar Americans, it's often because they physically can't keep doing the work anymore. Withholding benefits from the working class seems peculiar and cruel, said Matthew Iglesias in Bloomberg. Talk about the increases in life expectancy to 1940 is legitimate, but progress has been very uneven across U.S. society. Educated Americans are living much longer than we used to, but those without bachelor's degrees are not. Raising the eligibility age is essentially a benefit cut that targets people with below-average life expectancy. Many such Americans benefit from the opportunity to retire earlier than later. Forcing people to work longer is one of the worst possible options for fixing Social Security. Also from the Making Money segment, small caps remain in purgatory. Small cap stocks are underperforming larger peers by the widest margin in more than 20 years, said George Steer in the Financial Times. Since the beginning of 2020, the Russell 2000 index has risen 24%, lagging behind the S&P 500's more than 60% gain over the same period. The unusually wide spread, the largest since the late 1990s, comes partly from a steep rise in borrowing costs, which has disproportionately hurt smaller companies. Earnings in the fourth quarter for Russell 2000 companies were down 17.6% year-over-year. Earnings for S&P companies, in contrast, rose by about 4%. Although a large portion of the gain was driven by the so-called Magnificent Seven large tech stocks, small cap rally did gather pace in the final months of 2023, but has, quote-unquote, petered out. Robinhood's attractive credit card. Brokerage app Robinhood's new credit card is offering 3% cash back on every purchase, said Evan Zimmer in CNET. The perks of the Robinhood Gold Card are pretty impressive. That 3% cash back rate on everything you buy is practically unheard of. The money gets deposited to your Robinhood brokerage account. There are also numerous shopping and travel protections and no foreign transaction fee. Plus, for those who care about such things, it's a metal gold-plated credit card. What's the catch? Not much. To get it, you have to join Robinhood's Gold Service, which adds features to the free stock trading app via a subscription cost of $5 per month or $50 annually. Finally, from the Making Money segment, Puerto Rico tax breaks lure transplants. Financial incentives have made Puerto Rico a destination for Americans looking to relocate, said Cork Gaines in Business Insider. Between 2021 and 2022, almost 27,000 individuals moved from the U.S. mainland to Puerto Rico. Big reason is Act 60, 2019 bill loaded with benefits for American businesses and investors. Those who receive an Act 60 tax exemption get a 4% income tax rate, a 75% discount on property tax, and no tax on capital gains accrued while on the island. Recipients do have to give $10,000 annually to specific Puerto Rico-based charities and purchase a residence on the island within 2 years of relocating. The influx of wealthy Americans has contributed to a 28% increase in the price of a single-family home there since 2019. Next, we'll move to the talking point segment. AI, the floodgates are open. A deluge of AI-generated garbage is polluting our culture, said Eric Hoel in the New York Times, and it's transforming our lives in ways we're only beginning to understand. Increasingly, mounds of synthetic AI-generated outputs drift across our feeds and our searches and are making an insidious creep into our most important institutions. A new study examining scientists' peer reviews of AI research found, ironically enough, that many heavily relied on AI to write their work. Spotify is filled up with AI-generated songs, and YouTube with creepy AI-generated children's videos featuring weird two-beaked birds blathering incoherent narratives. Media outlets such as Sports Illustrated published AI-generated articles credited to fake authors, and Google searches pull up AI-generated images and articles. Meanwhile, AI programs that crunch the internet for vast troves of information are feeding on AI-written content, pointing to a future of copies of copies of copies that become ever more stereotyped and predictable. The tech industry calls this model collapse. As AI-generated content spread online, the internet is becoming stranger by the day, said Danny DiPlacido in Forbes. Virtual posts on X are flooded with comments by AI bots, and deep fake videos and imagery abounds, such as the pornographic images of Taylor Swift that spread in January. AI is destabilizing the concept of truth, said Tatum Hunter in the Washington Post. Consider the recent furor over Catherine, the Princess of Wales. First, she released a Mother's Day photo that proved to have been doctored. Then, she revealed her cancer diagnosis in a video. Some claimed it was a synthetic creation. In the age of AI, it's hard to tell what's real and what's not. The implication for democracy earned dire, said Alfred Lombardo in Philadelphia Inquirer. As November's election approaches, we might see fabricated videos showing election workers destroying ballots or candidates doing something scandalous. A few months back, an ad for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis showed fake images of Donald Trump embracing conservative Betanois Anthony Fauci. By election day, countless counterfeit images will leave reality wrecked and the truth nearly unknowable. Kathleen Hall Jameson, director of University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg Public Policy Center, says AI is moving so fast that efforts to detect and control it are failing. In our brave new world, she says, we should be suspicious of everything we see. Some items from the noted column and talking points. Chinese government-linked social media accounts masquerading as avid American Trump supporters are proliferating in the run-up to the election, according to online researchers and government officials. Some quote-unquote spamouflage accounts have mocked President Biden's age, shared fake images of him in a prison jumpsuit, and claimed that he is a Satanist pedophile, from the New York Times. Presidents Biden and Trump are the only presidents in more than a century who've served during years that Washington, D.C. had a pro baseball team and not thrown out ceremonial first pitch and opening day. William Howard Taft delivered the first presidential pitch in 1910 from the Washington Post. Harvard saw a 5% drop in undergraduate applications this year, suggesting concerns over rising anti-Semitism on campus have hurt the appeal of the elite college. The university received 54,008 applications, a four-year low. Applications to all other Ivy League institutions, except for Brown University, went up. This from the Wall Street Journal. Finally, in the noted column, some 42,400 bridges in the U.S., carrying about 167 million vehicles every day, have been judged to be in poor condition by the Department of Transportation. More than 15,800 of them were also in poor condition a decade ago, from the Associated Press. Finally, from Talking Points, Trump hawking Bibles for profit. Donald Trump, grifter extraordinaire, is now a Bible salesman, said Courtney Thomas in Slate. Yes, the Trump-endorsed God Bless the USA Bible can be yours for only $59.99, a bargain considering the leather-bound large print volume also contains the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and handwritten lyrics to Lee Greenwood's country anthem, God Bless the USA. In an infomercial released last week, Trump pitches the King James translation as a must-have MAGA accessory. It's my favorite book, says the man behind the Trump Stakes, Trump University, and $399 Never Surrender high tops. We must make America pray again. Trump, who likely never cracked the Bible in his life, must be getting desperate, said Michael Tomasky in the New Republic. His legal bills are starting to bite. Of nearly $105 million he received in donations last year, more than half went to legal expenses. You'd suspect he'd hawk anything that isn't nailed to the floor. Plenty of Americans want what Trump is selling, said Michael Bender in the New York Times. At campaign rallies, supporters whoop and jeer as he throws out red meat attacks on the media and Democrats, then raise open palms in the air or murmur as if in prayer when he delivers a solemn, sermon-like closing note. To a growing number of his evangelical voters, three times married playboy is a modern version of Old Testament heroes like Cyrus or David, a morally flawed figure handpicked by God to lead profound missions. Many accept his narrative that he is facing four criminal cases only because he dared to resist the persecution of his Christian followers by liberal deep state elites. They crucified him worse than Jesus, said Adriana Howard, 67, a Trump supporter in Conway, South Carolina. It's easy to laugh at the absurdity of Trump for all the people as an emblem of Christianity, said Andrew Sullivan in his Substack newsletter. But what the Orange Herod and his flock practice is not Christianity, but Christianism, an authoritarian reactionary creed that's transformed a secular leader into the last bulwark between believers and total annihilation. With such ludicrously existential stakes, accepting even Trump's most depraved actions, an alleged infidelity with a porn star, selling Bibles for profit, attempting a coup, becomes a test of faith and proof of dedication to the cause. True Christianity requires the renunciation of earthly power. The Trumpian version is obsessed with wielding it ruthlessly. Next, we'll move to the People segment. Brunson's Comic Rebellion. Quentin Brunson was a comedy prodigy, said Molly Fisher in The New Yorker. Growing up in West Philadelphia, the future Abbott Elementary creator and star was still in her car seat when she realized she could crack up her four siblings and parents with comic impressions. In high school, she took an evangelical approach to humor, persuading a teacher to play the 2004 movie Napoleon Dynamite to the class so other students would understand its genius. They were converted. That was a moment for me, said Brunson, 34, being like, I know comedy. But her kindergarten teacher, mom, parking lot manager, dad, both devout Jehovah's Witnesses, considered her comedy ambitions all too worldly. There were intense fights with my mom. You could write a scene out of them. While attending Temple University and living at home, Brunson began honing her craft on the sly, attending improv rehearsals and secretly using her savings to take a comedy course at Chicago's Second City. Her parents disapproved when Brunson dropped out of school and moved to Los Angeles, where she went from making viral videos to working in writers' rooms to developing shows. When her mother saw Abbott, a tribute to the teaching profession, it was the first time she told me she was proud of me. I remember my mom telling me, I know who you are now. Also from the People segment, Aykroyd's unconventional career path. Dan Aykroyd took a circuitous route to Hollywood fame, said Brian O'Keefe and Esquire. The Ottawa native initially wanted to be a priest, but was kicked out of a seminary school at 17 for dressing up a pig as the Pope. I was not a good student, said Aykroyd, 71, but I was an entertaining one. He studied criminology in college, worked a summer as a clerk for the Canadian Penitentiary Service. I read a manual for deploying weapons in riots, and I thought, well, it's an interesting profession. But comedian Valerie Bromfield, whom he'd met in high school, had other ideas. She said, you're not going to be a prison guard. You're coming with me to Toronto. She dragged me off with our audition tape that we'd made on cable TV in Ottawa, got the attention of Saturday Night Live creator Lorne Michaels. Aykroyd would appear on the first four seasons of SNL from 1975 to 1979, later become a Ghostbuster and a Blues Brother, role that left him showcase his skill on the harmonica. He'd learned the instrument as a teenager when I went up north as a road surveyor and tundra crawler mechanic for the Department of Public Works. Played the harp up there around a campfire. I was modestly proficient on it. Still am today. A brief item from the Poll Watch column. 26% of Americans identify as religiously unaffiliated, up 5% since 2013. 67% of the unaffiliated say they've stopped believing their old religion's teachings, with 47% citing those about gay and lesbian people. This from Public Religion Research Institute. And let's wrap up with some wit and wisdom. Give up self-reflection and you're soon enlightened. Give up self-definition and you're soon apparent. Lao Tzu quoted in the Marjolinian. Blessed are the young, for they shall inherit the national debt. Herbert Hoover quoted in the Lock Haven, Pennsylvania Express. Our comforting conviction that the world makes sense rests on a secure foundation, our almost unlimited ability to ignore our ignorance. Psychologist Daniel Kahneman quoted in The Knowledge. Well-behaved women seldom make history. Historian Laurel Thatcher Ulrich quoted in The National Review. When a man tells you that he knows the exact truth about anything, you're safe in inferring that he's an inexact man. Bertrand Russell quoted in Forbes. There's a God-shaped hole in every human heart. If it doesn't get filled with something noble and elevated, modern society will quickly pump it full of garbage. Social psychologist Jonathan Haltz quoted in The Guardian. And finally, from Wit and Wisdom, those who are easily shocked should be shocked more often. Mae West quoted in Goodreads.com. And that's all we have time for today. I've been reading from the April 12th installment of The Week magazine. We thank you for listening. So long until next time.